This is All Things Considered from NPR News. I'm Debbie Elliott. For more than 43 years, columnist William Raspberry has been working at the Washington Post, where he started as a teletype operator. As a reporter, he won awards for his coverage of the Watts riots and later a Pulitzer Prize for his columns, which have been running at the Post since 1966 and nationally syndicated since 1977. His last column will appear December 26th. William Raspberry joins us from his home in Washington, D.C. Hello, sir.
Good afternoon.
You started at a time when there were not very many black journalists, certainly at the nation's major newspapers. Can you take us back to the beginning of your career?
There were very few of us in the newsroom in those days. I was not the first, as some imagine I must be at this age, at the Washington Post newsroom. There were a couple of people already there when I came, but we were pretty few and far between. And I guess I have to consider myself one of the pioneers in that sense. I was one of three or four youngsters hired as general assignments reporters at the same time. The others were white. None of us had a specialty. And I early on saw the advantage of a specialty in terms of getting better stories. So I started asking myself, what is it I know that the other guys don't know? What am I better at? And my thought was that I've had a couple of decades being black, and they haven't. And it was also, you remember, in the early 60s, at the beginning of the civil rights movement, not the beginning of it, but it was certainly heating up then. I was a local reporter, but there was a shadow of the national movement very much alive in Washington, D.C. They were desegregating townhouse communities and agitating, you won't believe this, to get black cashiers, black checkout people at the Giant and the Safeway, to desegregate movie houses. I mean, it was all those things that were going on nationally had their echoes here. I thought if I became the local expert in covering those, I could assure myself good stories several days a week.
You've seen a lot in your career. You mentioned the civil rights movement was blossoming as you were starting. Then there was the Vietnam War, Watergate, later Rodney King. How do you see the country evolving over this time? It seems there is always something that can divide people.
Yeah, it does make you wonder philosophically whether we're always going to find something to divide over. One of the things that bothers me about some of our present-day disputes and disagreements is the extent to which people are willing to absolutely savage one another over what philosophically are relatively trivial differences. That's new, at least in its intensity. We didn't used to have to kill each other off to have a political debate. We were allowed to say, hey, you know, you have a point there. But now we're in a mode where if you and I are declared political opponents, I can't acknowledge that anything you say makes sense, and you can't acknowledge that anything I say makes sense. So we artificially build this unresolvable situation, and it colors almost everything we talk about these days. We do the red state, blue state business as though people are vastly different on one side of a line than on the other. And it's not so. Not only are states not all red, all blue, individuals are not all red or blue. You and I are not all red or blue. We seem comfortable now driving people toward one end or the other. If you can get one person saying A and one person saying Z and the whole world mad at you, you have a tendency to come away saying, I must have got the story right, because they're both angry. They may be angry because you got it wrong and you missed all the nuance in between. And it's the in-between where people actually live and have to get along.
William Raspberry, one of the things you keep coming back to in your columns is the issue of poverty.
We're paying far, far too little attention to the fact that, to use the cliche, that's true, the rich are getting richer and the poor are getting poorer, and the gap between them is widening. And when you have such a huge divide, something happens to a country. And one of the things that happens is that people who don't have see such a distance between themselves and those who do have that they can't realistically aspire anymore. When you have the hope that if I play by the rules, I can be okay, it makes you support the rules. Rich people have more to fear from an unstable country than poor ones, really.
Now, even as you point out the plight of the poor in this country, you also make a very strong case that people at some level have a very basic responsibility to help themselves.
Let me say it this way. The barriers to our progress as black people have always been both internal and external. Those external barriers have been greatly ameliorated. I don't say that the outside is faultless. I simply say that the next wave of progress, in my view, will have to be the result of what we do internally and not simply what we resist externally.
And you're actually putting a little bit of that in action. You grew up in Mississippi in the small town of Okolona, and you started a program there called Baby Steps.
I was looking at children who enter kindergarten already behind. The parents of these youngsters are not bad people. They love their children and want them to do well. They simply hadn't figured out how to make that happen. So I thought, why don't we start teaching them some of the things that middle-class parents routinely do to get their children ready for education and, by implication, for life? So I personally started this Baby Steps program in my hometown of Okolona, Mississippi, paying for it out of pocket. And a number of parents kind of liked the idea and they came on board. And I'm convinced that what we're doing with a relatively small group of parents in one little town of 3,500 may turn out to be more significant than the last 35 columns.
William Raspberry, what's next for you? You've been teaching
What's
at Duke University. Are you going to keep that up?
I'll keep teaching at Duke for a couple of years. Yes, I enjoy the teaching very much. I've enjoyed this column writing business for a good long time and could well enjoy it longer. And I'm choosing to stop it at this point for a couple of reasons. One is that I very much dislike the idea of leaving a job horizontally. I think you ought to walk away while you still got some options and some life left. But back to the Baby Steps program. It's as big as it can get out of my pocket. I need to raise some money to make it work, and I can't raise money and work as a journalist at the same time. The conflict of interest is just hopeless. So, after a year virtually of agonizing about this thing, I decided that the choice I have to make is to make that program grow.
What will you miss most?
The chance to be heard on issues that are important as they come up. There's no doubt in my mind that within 10 days after my last column, something will happen, and I'll think, doggone it, I wish I had a chance to weigh forth on that one. But that's the nature of the game.
William Raspberry's last column will appear in the Washington Post December 26th. He holds the Knight Chair in Communications and Journalism at Duke University. We spoke with him from his home in Washington, D.C. Thank you so much.
It's been fun. Thank you.
You can hear more from my interview with William Raspberry at npr.org.